friends. Of course, I go by the name of the Kid, famous. You and I tuned into the Tim and Friends show. Hello, education, entertainment, coast to coast. Ball it up, call it entertainment. Let's get this started. Uncle Tim, let's start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Tim and Friends, I've lost track of how many episodes. It's probably a good thing. Bigger stuff to worry about these days, like if our camera person isn't going to fall while bumping into a chair. I'm going to tell you right now, Sebastian, that was wonderful work, my friend, because you didn't even know that chair snuck up on him. Only one of them around today because of this COVID thing. Wonderful job, Seb. That was like skilled. That right there, Jesse, that's a former figure skater right there.
Really?
You know what I'm talking about? Twinkle Toes.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
Now you know.
Now I know.
If you don't know, now you know. Great job, Sebby. Sorry to stop the show for all that. Tim McAuliffe, in the words of Genuine, even though I might be on TV, all you will ever see is the same old G. The things that were more important to me a year ago remain important to me now. I'm a little thrown off. I admit it. Sebby, good job. All right. If I could stress anything in this day and age, it would be, hey, be good to your fellow human beings. Like it or not, we are in this ish together, and love is always better than hate. All right, now that I got that off my chest, I got some energy today. Sebby twinkle-toeing over there, Jesse over here. All right, let's spread that positive energy. We got a roundtable assembled for Tuesday. If you haven't figured it out, Tuesday's roundtable day. And if you ever have any ideas on what you would like to hear or what you'd like to see from us, let us know. 24/7 at Tim and Friends. Jesse Rubinoff has got you covered. Today, it's a post-deadline pre-playoff extravaganza. Man, I can't talk today. I apologize. Let me try that again. It is a post-deadline pre-playoff extravaganza. Nick Kyprios, Darren Millard, and Stephen Dangle is back. That should be fun if I can get the marbles out of my mouth. Also, Jeff Blair in the second hour as the Jays and Yankees dance the dance of baseball in Dunedin for game 2 of their 3-game set. Blue Jays Central comes your way 6:30 Eastern on TV, and after getting Garrett Cole in a 3-1 loss yesterday, today it's Hyunjin Ryu versus dual citizen Jameson Taillon as the Jays at 4-6 try to find some consistency. And stick around for the unofficial pregame to the pregame right here on Tim and Friends. 2 games in the North last night, 1 more tonight. Leafs go back-to-back. The Buds lost last night to the Habs, 4-2, snapping their 6-game winning streak, and now turn to their newest goalie to start another streak, David Rittich, who took the flight and the chirps from his former teammates from Calgary to Toronto, and now will face them tonight in what will be Milan Lucic's 1,000th career game. Now, flying with the team that you are about to play could be awkward for some, but not Big Save Dave. He's not normal. He's a good dude who is well-liked in the room, now poised, though, with the task of helping drive a nail into his former team's coffin, especially with the Habs' win last night. Count it all up. Montreal now 8 points up on Calgary with 2 games in hand. The numbers have led more than a few traditionalists to start thinking about the Habs and the Leafs in the playoffs for the first time since 1979, which is crazy. And somewhere, Carey Fraser is pulling a Moelle Desmore when questioned about a sex boat. Sex? Come on, man. I'm engaged. For many a Canadian sports fan, Leafs, Habs in the Cup Final would have been like sex, but I digress a lot. So let's get back to the deadline. Despite the loss last night, do you think the Leafs still won the deadline? A lot of people do. It wasn't long ago Kyle Dubas and the Leafs were being painted as the analytic darlings of the NHL, gathering as much skill as humanly possible and hoping to run opponents out of the rink. But the sting of 4 straight opening round losses seems to have reshaped the building of this team, or at least evolved it. Much of the young, skilled group remains, but Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas have given Sheldon Keefe a little more diversity in what he can throw out there than Mike Babcock had. It started with the move to get Jake Muzzin back in 2019. But think of the additions of the last year or so. Heart and soul, old-school hockey culture guys like Wayne Simmonds, Zach Bogosian, TJ Brody, and now Nick Foligno have added a certain edge to what was once the team that had to turn the other cheek, also adding good guys like Jason Spezza, Joe Thornton, David Riddick, Jack Campbell, and it looks pretty clear the Leafs have targeted surrounding their great young talent with rock-solid people and players. The Buds now have 12 players who have worn a letter in the show, captains or assistants. A real cultural change. All in the hopes that it helps them turn the corner that their fans have been waiting for them to turn since, well, pick the date. 2017, 2004, 1994, maybe 1967. It's crazy. They might want to rethink the Connor Brown deal, though. My goodness. Connor Brown is hotter than Polo G. That's right. Rap star, rock star, all them things. Another Sens game, a win no less against the Jets, and another Brown goal. He has now scored in 8 straight games. That's tied for the longest streak in the 2000s. That's right. Not McDavid, not Ovi, not Leon, kind of sort of Matthews, but not officially. Either way, one more, and he joins an elite group as the only players to score 9 straight or more in the last 25 years. The other two to do it, Teemu Selänne and Jaromir Jagr. And yes, they are both Hall of Famers, or will be. Connor bleeping Brown. Congrats. That's impressive. Haven't really talked ball yet as the Raptors start the front end of back-to-backs. Atlanta and San Antonio tonight and tomorrow, both in Tampa. Kyle Lowry out again tonight, resting. He'll play against DeMar and the Spurs. At least that's what we think. No Van Vliet either. But at least they're coming back this season, which can't be said for the subject of First Things First.
First things first.
The news today was terrible for Jamal Murray and Canadian basketball fans, as our country's best basketball player was diagnosed with a torn ACL in his left knee. It looked bad when it happened last night. Murray crumpled to the floor less than a minute to go in the Nuggets' loss to the Warriors. He was clutching his knee, pounding the floor in obvious pain. But in true Canadian fashion, and bleep Paul Pierce, he refused the wheelchair they brought out and hobbled off the floor. We hoped it was better than it looked. But today, the Nuggets confirmed it was a torn ACL. Murray now facing an estimated recovery time of anywhere from 7 to 12 months. It is a devastating blow to not only the Nuggets championship aspirations, but Canada basketball's hopes at this summer's Olympics and potentially, they hoped, was a podium in Tokyo. The 24-year-old from Kitchener was having another career season, averaging career highs in points, assists, field goal percentage, three-point percentage, and steals. And the Nuggets were legitimate title contenders, loading up at the deadline as they looked to improve on last season's run to the conference finals, led, of course, by Murray, who was one of the stories of the bubble last summer, with 4 40-point performances and 2 50-point games in the playoffs. One of those 50-burger games came in an epic performance in Game 6 against the Jazz in the conference semis, with his team facing elimination. Murray, 17 of 24 from the field, 9 of 12 from 3, as the Nuggets rallied from 3-1 down in the series to force a Game 7, which, of course, they went on to win. Murray joined Michael Jordan, Wilt Chamberlain, and Allen Iverson as the only players in NBA history with 2 50-point games in the same postseason, all the while taking on the added weight of what that bubble had become for many. More than just a game. And while Murray's game spoke volumes, it was his actual words after the 50-point performance that moved many more to fall in love with the character of the man beyond the jersey.
How did you carry over the momentum from an explosive Game 4, Game 5, and then put everything else aside that happened this week and go out and drop 50 in a must-win game tonight?
You got a way to win. These shoes mean a lot. Shoes mean a lot.
Take a deep breath, Jamal. You were outstanding tonight. We understand that these are tough times. Jamal, what are you thinking about right now?
I just want to win. And in life, you find things that hold value to you and things to fight for. And we found something worth fighting for as an NBA, as a collective unit. And I usually choose as a symbol to me to keep fighting all around the world. So like I said, they give me a lot of power to keep fighting, and we want to win. I show my emotion, it comes out, so.
You have a picture of George Floyd on your right shoe here. You got Breonna Taylor. Why has this been so personal for you, Jamal?
Because it's not just in America. It happens everywhere. And for us to come together, the NBA, and, you know, it doesn't take one meeting. It takes a couple meetings, a few meetings. It takes phone calls. It takes persistence. It's not going to take one night. And we've been trying to fight for 400 years. But these shoes give me life. Even though these people are gone, they give me life. They give me. They help me find strength to keep fighting this world. That's what I'm keep doing.
You're a special person, Jamal Murray, on and off the court. Congratulations.
Appreciate it.
All the more powerful, again, unfortunately, the image of him in the tunnel, exhausted, with the word freedom scrawled across his back, will go down in the annals of NBA history. That and his game were why there was an immediate outpouring of compassion and support from around the basketball community when his injury was announced. Murray, not just from Canadians, but names across the continent and the world reaching out with well wishes to Jamal. This is not just a huge loss for the Nuggets and the NBA, but for Canada basketball as well, as they prepare for the most important summer for the program in probably more than two decades. Murray's injury means Canada will be without their best player and someone who has demonstrated a passion for playing for his country, a player who first burst onto the scene wearing the red and white, at least the national scene, at the Pan Am Games in 2015, leading Canada to an upset win over the United States and the silver medal at home in Toronto. Even without Murray, Canada should still have a good spot or shot at qualifying for their first Olympics since 2000. But any dreams of standing on the podium in Tokyo just got a lot more unlikely. New Orleans Pelicans forward Josh Hart blamed Murray's injury on the NBA's condensed schedule this season, and he may have a point. Murray joins a growing list of star players currently out with injury, including LeBron James, Anthony Davis, James Harden, LaMelo Ball, Gordon Hayward, Victor Oladipo, and fellow Canadian Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. ZSPN's Bobby Marks tweeted, Murray is the fifth NBA player to suffer a torn ACL this year. High number, especially when you compare it to previous seasons. In addition to all those other career highs, Murray was also averaging his career high in minutes per game this season and was playing in his first game back after missing four games with a sore right knee and may have rushed back following rare back-to-back losses for the Nuggets. Whether it was the schedule, whether or not that was a factor, it doesn't change the fact that this is just incredibly disappointing news for Murray, the Nuggets, Canada basketball, and a hell of a lot of basketball fans. But if anyone has shown the work ethic and desire that it will take to come back even stronger, it's Jamal Murray. And as you can tell, there are so many in Canada and beyond pulling for him to make a full and speedy recovery.
First things first.
Time to bring in Jesse Rubinoff, our digital producer and translator of the tweets. What are the folks saying out there about Jamal?
Yeah, so when we found out about Jamal, we relayed the news over Twitter and Instagram. And I think there's one Instagram comment that kind of sums everything up for us, for the NBA community. John says, I was so looking forward to watching him come playoff time. So sad. I don't wish injury on players, but why does this always seem to happen to the good guys? Yeah. And I think that's a big prevailing thought for NBA fans. You saw in that clip, Jamal is just one of the good guys of the NBA. And Dan Devine of Devine of The Ringer pointed out just how close Jamal Murray was getting to his level of play as he was in the bubble.
Yeah.
And if you just look at the stats here, the bubble playoffs, you alluded to it, 24 points a game, 6 assists, 4.5 rebounds. Last 2 months per 36 minutes, 23 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds. So certainly getting close to that level of performance that he had in the bubble, that if he wasn't already a household name to every NBA fan, he certainly became a household name after his performance in the bubble. So it just makes it that much worse for Jamal and for NBA fans, because they're not going to get to enjoy watching him in the playoffs.
People talk about a 180 shooter in the NBA. And if you're a 180 shooter, that's big time stuff. It's 50, 40, 90. Yep. And if you look at Devine's tweet again, and I'm going to ask the guys to bring it up one more time, you can see he was shooting better than 50, 40, 90 in the last 2 months. He was shooting 50, 45, 94.
94.
Like, so what it is from the line, from three, from the field, from the three, and from the line. Those are your numbers. So he was over 50% from the field, over 45% from three, and over 90 from the line. Just ridiculous numbers. And let's hope that he can get back to that, because it's unbelievable what he did in the bubble. And some at the start of the year thought, oh, looks like he just does that in the playoffs, which is no slouch anyway. Yeah. But he was picking up the pace, and the Nuggets were also picking up the pace, which is why this sucks.
Yeah, just went and got Aaron Gordon, too. They really were one of the up-and-coming teams that you were going to look for in the playoffs. And maybe they still will, because they're still a good team, but it's a big loss for them.
All right, as I tried to say, if you ever have any ideas for First Things First or our roundtables, hit us up at Tim and Friends. Jesse and our group will look through them and try and get them to the air. All right, I said I was bringing positive energy off the top, so let's get there. Still to come, Jeff Blair in studio ahead of the Yankees and the Jays. Chris Cuthbert and Sean McKenzie from Scotiabank Arena ahead of the Flames and the Leafs. And up next, a round table will be assembled. Post-trade deadline, we chop it up with Nick Kiprios, Darren Millard, and Steve Dangle as we hit the stretch drive in the NHL regular season. It's a Tuesday, Tim and Friends.
Line A now, marching up ice. Line A around the hub. What a goal!
Of a cannon is Patrick Laine.
Three on two if they hurry. Grayson Allen lobs it for Moran, who hammers it down. Pretty play.
Look where he catches it.
And now a steal for Nico Mannion. You want to take this?
Oh,
he dropped it out of bounds for you.
My guy, Nico, I was so ready to hype you up.
Look, I gotta ask, Julian Edelman retiring?
He's a great teammate. Three-time Super Bowl champ, MVP of the Super Bowl.
Is there any chance that he ends up in Tampa Bay with you guys next year?
Has there 69% chance.
The Tuesday Roundtable is officially a thing here on Tim and Friends. Today we have a look back at the deadline and ahead to the stretch run and playoffs in the National Hockey League. And here to help us break it down, three old school friends of the show joining me from the Kiprios Studios in Toronto is Nick Kiprios. Welcome back, buddy.
How are you, pal? Three of us? Nobody said anything to me about three.
Well, hold on. It's a guy you might know from the home of the Golden Knights and a couple of other establishments that we'll leave to the imagination. From Las Vegas, Nevada, it's Darren Millard. D, good to see you, buddy.
Hey, this is great to be back with you.
Do you have any masks that you might be able to pull out for the visuals here around here? I don't know.
A couple.
You got a few goalie masks that you got?
Yeah. What do you need? What color do you want?
I like them all, buddy.
What's your style?
And a man, let me introduce the last one. A man who after the Leafs deadline must feel like a grade 8 at his first dance. Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Dangle. Accurate description, stretching a little. You can be honest, you're among friends.
Dancing with no one, I guess, would be an accurate description of me in the eighth grade there, Tim.
You're dancing with everybody today because we've got the round table assembled. I'm excited. I just thought you might be excited given the Leafs deadline. A little bit, smidgen?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. I'm just jealous of Darren. Like, I'm sitting here. I got, like, McDonald's toys hanging on the wall. This guy's got legit, like, goalie mask covering from floor to ceiling.
But what was grade eight like last year?
You know what? The math was really hard, I found. The English, I did good with.
I know I'm teaching grade 8 math right now.
Yeah, we all are.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's start with the Leafs, boys. Kipper, a lot of people up here felt like the Leafs won the deadline, and now that you're not part of the wall-to-wall coverage, can you tell us what does winning the deadline actually mean if you do think the Leafs won it?
It's such an overstated term, winning trade deadline. Leafs could get knocked out in the first round, and they're going to get killed for that trade deadline day or weekend. So that's all that matters. And on how this thing all turns out, you assume that they got the guy that they wanted all along. It wasn't Taylor Hall. It was Nick Foligno. It was about the pushback, about a guy that could play anywhere between your first line and be the 10th forward in your lineup. And that's what they're going to need. They don't need any more goals. They need physicality, pushback. They need the same guy that looked a camera and said 2 years ago that this Leaf team is as soft as baby doo-doo. Okay, so that guy, the character of that guy, just call it the way it is. That's what they're looking for. That's what they've got. And that's one that they hope will get them at least to the conference final. This is all about now thinking about not just pushing back out of the North division, but a conference final against maybe Carolina or Tampa Bay. This is about getting to the dance, the big dance, the Stanley Cup final.
I love the Norris reference, even though you meant the North. I love it. Nikolai Borishevsky is going to score a goal here, and the Leafs are going to move on. Darren, do you agree that the Leafs won the deadline, if there is such a thing?
Well, I was going to say, like, who declared that the Leafs won the deadline? I thought the New York Islanders did pretty well ahead of the deadline in acquiring Palmieri and Travis Zajac and shoring up their fold. Like, Toronto did a good job in separating themselves from their division rivals in Edmonton and in Winnipeg. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't think that that the Stanley Cup favorites changed across the board, whether it be the challengers like the Tampa Bay Lightning or Colorado Avalanche, Vegas Golden Knights or Washington Capitals. I don't think those odds changed very much. They gave themselves an advantage. They did a good job in shoring up some holes and giving themselves some experience and making sure that they had some insurance in goal. But you win two rounds, you face a whole different ball game, and we'll see what happens then. That's probably the only way time will know who won the deadline.
Dangle, are you surprised there wasn't more movement among the Canadian teams?
Yeah, big time, especially because, like, I know you don't like trading within your division and all that, but, like, this is done. Like, this isn't going to be back. So to see the Leafs and the Flames, for example, make that one deal made a lot of sense, because who cares if one makes the other better? You're going to go right back to playing each other twice a season. I thought it was a pretty good deal for both teams, but I was pretty surprised. Like, Vancouver didn't get in there a little bit more. The Sens were pretty active. They got a lot of picks, but yeah, like, you guys aren't going to see each other. Just make a deal.
Yeah. The trading within the division, right, Darren?
Yeah. But giving up a third round pick for a guy that you hope never plays or dresses for you.
Oh, he's playing tonight.
That's
you're a goalie. You don't need a goalie until you need a goalie.
Listen, if Darren's right, if this gets to Riddick, it's over already. Yeah. The third rounder is so the media can't go back to Kyle Dubas and say,
bing,
left yourself vulnerable. That's all that is.
But that's and listen, I would tend to agree with you, and I'm not saying that I disagree with you right now, but in this COVID time, having the fourth string goalie might actually play. Like, you almost are covering your ass no matter what with a third round pick.
So you
I think that's fair to say. Listen, it's just not injuries. It's this horrible thing called COVID that can hit and strike at any time still. So, you know, in saying that, yes, it is above and beyond an insurance policy that Kyle could not look the other way on. But a third round pick, and I'm not a Riddick fan. There's something about him. Yes, he's got NHL experience, and I get all of that. But, oh, man, some rough games in Calgary this year.
Darren, I know you wanted to jump in there, so I don't want to.
Well, he was the backup goaltender on a team that's not going to make the playoffs. and you spent a third rounder. I just, surely that pick can be used somewhere else, or or you just go somewhere else for another backup goaltender. I just thought it was a really steep price and a sort of just overkill on the whole day on that front.
And just a note, for me, the biggest disappointment, and I know Steve just mentioned about some other teams here, Winnipeg. Come on. You are supposed to be a team that can contend right now, arguably a deeper forward than even the Toronto Maple Leafs, according to some. And you don't want to shore up your blue line a little bit more?
Can you not say throw Edmonton in that too, Nick? Like trying to close the gap? Both clubs, I think, would be a little bit frustrated.
Well, Kulikov at least can give you some – he can munch some minutes. But I look at Jordy Benn and I'm like, they probably could have used something a little heavier than that. It's a little bit more consistent. I know they weren't really into Savard like Tampa Bay was, but that was the type of guy that you could sit there and give some of the players some real juice on trying to beat the Toronto Maple Leafs out of this North Division.
I kept waiting for Jamie Oleksiak to be called there. That's the kind of
guy. Did Winnipeg lose the other night like a team that was really disappointed? They didn't get more help to Ottawa?
You know, it's funny. I think that they were in on Ekholm, and when the Preds decided that we're going to stick around in this and maybe even add Steve, they were kind of lost in the mix. And listen, Ken Holland came on this show, and I thought he was really honest with his fan base without coming out and saying it. Listen, we tried to do this last year. Mike Green, Athanasiou, it didn't work out. I can't keep mortgaging the future. If you're a part of a fan base, Steve Dangle, wouldn't you rather just kind of hear that and understand what the situation is? Because you can't go for it every year or you'll be left with nothing in the minors.
Well, I screwed up last year, and I guess to no fault of his own, but we screwed up last year, or we were dealt a raw deal. So we're not going to try this year. Like, to me, that doesn't make any sense. And you know, on the Winnipeg front, Mike Riley from the Sens, who I think is really great, he's underrated, could have been had for a third. You add him and Jordy Benn, you know, maybe it's a bit more digestible of a deadline for the Jets. But to see three of the really, I mean, the Canadian teams who are going to make it, let's be honest. I mean, we know who the four are. To see three of them do basically nothing, it's kind of discouraging.
Hmm. Well, and for Oiler fans, looking at their last 10 years, I'm not sure Ken Holland's words mean a lot to them.
It doesn't. It's just the truth.
The only ones that matter are really Connor McDavid and Connor McDavid. If he buys into Kenny Holland, you're okay.
Right.
If he's rolling his eyes right now going, another lost opportunity in my prime, then there might be some issues down the road.
Unless you don't think that you're that far off from Toronto. Does Winnipeg, Kenny Holland and Edmonton feel like they're maybe closer than the rest of us believe that they are to the Maple Leafs?
Or further.
I don't know. Yeah. True.
Or further. Darren, outside of Canada, who was the best pickup at the deadline? And you can't give me the tandem in New York, although I do like the tandem on the island.
I like what Florida did. Maybe not just one pickup, but different pieces. Sam Bennett being the key one there. I love what Tampa Bay did with Savard and making that acquisition. So the two Florida teams, I think, did really, really well. But the Florida Panthers quietly have done a good job. Bill Zito's done a nice job with Joel Quenneville there, and we'll see how far that goes. That was more of a team sort of doing more than dip their toe into it and rewarding a roster for a good regular season. So I'll give my nod to Florida.
Stephen S. Dangle, who was your favorite acquisition at the deadline?
Well, I don't even know if I could get it out of my stomach without vomiting here on live television. Uh-oh. But I mean, the Boston Bruins, I think, did extremely well. I already said Mike Riley, but I mean, Taylor Hall for pennies on the dollar. And folks, he's not going to shoot 2.3%. For the rest of the season. I don't know when this guy became the least popular guy in the entire National Hockey League.
When he had two goals.
I mean, when he had two goals, but he also had 17 assists on a team that just got their third player to get over five goals. Let's go, Buffalo. you can't tell me this guy is not going to light it up. playing behind the perfection line as opposed to what he was playing with in Buffalo.
Yeah, boys, Tampa Bay, David Savard, old school, five-on-five hockey, maybe a power play or two in the playoffs, blocking shots, shutting down key guys, has the secret sauce on shutting down Marner and Matthews if it comes down to a conference final. Tampa Bay going back-to-back.
All right, Kipper, I got to ask you about this because Tampa did it with Savard. The Leafs did it with Foligno. Is the league upset with some of the cap gymnastics that went on this deadline or money laundering just to be creative and get guys on their team?
Gary Bettman doesn't care how the pie gets sliced. Okay. He just wants to know that it's the same size. So it doesn't really matter. You pick up 50 here, you pick up 50 there. I don't care. I know at the end of the day that what the revenue is and how much to the penny you guys are getting. Figure it out amongst yourselves. I'm all set with this hard salary cap.
The fewest number of players changed teams since the mid-90s on a trade deadline day. Imagine if we didn't have working through teams available. There wouldn't have been anything happen yesterday. Vegas did it again for the second straight year to acquire a player. I think it's creative. I think it's pretty ingenious. And it gives teams with salary cap space an opportunity to leverage it.
Dangle, what's your favorite mask behind Darren?
Oh, I do. Is that almost looks like an old Vesitoscola, just to the right of your head there, right next to the Darren.
It
looks like, remember his sharks, like munch scary shark skull mask behind you there?
Yeah. I don't know which one you're referring. Is it the one facing you or the one facing me? This is a Bob Essenza. I've got a Bob Essenza one.
Classic Winnipeg.
And, I don't know who else.
Darren. Which is the one that you wear when you negotiated your contract in Vegas?
What do you mean, because I've got a good gig?
Yes, very good gig.
All right, we'll take the break at this juncture in time. We'll come back with more of the roundtable. We'll look at the other divisions around the league and look forward to the postseason as the Tim and Friends roundtable continues. And Millard might even answer the question next. Tim and Friends, the pregame to the pregame for the Jays and Yankees. By the way, we got some Jays news coming up. Springer, Pearson, Teoscar Hernandez, and Flames and Leafs today. Jeff Blair, Sean McKenzie, Chris Buthrick, all coming up. But back for one more is the roundtable, Kiprios, Millard, and Dangle. Segment number two begins with a multiple choice. Fellas, try and remember the options.
C.
Always guess C. Who has the most pressure to perform? A, Mark Bergevin, B, Taylor Hall, C, the Leafs core, or D, a la Family Feud, I'm going to go out on my own. Let's start with Kipper. Which one of those has the most pressure?
I like the pressure on Mark Bergevin in Montreal. I think that the start that they got out of the gate really gave everybody the impression that this team could contend. And I'm not sure what they're thinking today, but he's going to have to find a way to justify his coaching change because that was supposed to be the major issue. And at least that's what he kind of led us all to believe, that this is a really good team. And the only thing that was holding him back and the team back was Claude Julien and his style. And Ducharme has not come in there and provided any different look. So between needing to look like Carey Price can carry a team to a victory all by himself, the pressure on Montreal is always going to be there in that first round.
All right, Dangle, if you remember the options.
I'm going to say the Leafs core because, you know, okay, a little bit of baby fat, a little bit of inexperience. Okay, we're now about 4 years deep on this now. We all agree the team looks different. They look a little tougher. They're the best team in Canada, at least by the regular season standings, certainly. They don't have any picks left. They've moved heaven and earth to make this team better. There's the guy they just acquired scoring against them and icing the series. If they don't get out of the first round this year, or I'd argue even the division, I think the patience is going to run out for this group very fast.
Darren Millard.
Does Dubas lose his job then?
I don't know if it's that fast, but someone might lose their spot in the core, put it that way. I mean, I don't think it's going to be Matthews or Marner, but we're talking a very significant shakeup if they can't get out of the first round, for crying out loud, with the team that they've assembled.
Yeah, like shipping.
Can I just say that,
like, shipping Nylander would be a huge difference? But go ahead.
St. Louis missed an entire draft in the mid-80s, and they made more picks than the Leafs have next year.
Right.
That's how much they've sold off. I'm going to go with Taylor Hall, because if it does, like, he managed to steer everything towards Boston. He wanted Boston and uses no movement to get to Boston after signing with Buffalo and it didn't work, and agreeing to go to Arizona where it didn't work. If it doesn't work now with Boston, we might be looking at a real change in his career path and his value, monetarily value, within the National Hockey League. Now, if it works, he should automatically re-sign with Boston at 25% less than what anybody else is going to offer him. But if it doesn't, could he go from an $8 million player to a $3 million player, just based on what we've seen between the Arizona, Buffalo, and Boston experience? That's where I see the pressure being most. And it's, Kippy, you know it. It's financial and it's personal. And
well,
when things come together, there's some heat on you.
It's the first time he's really playing with proven winners here. And if you look at Bergevin and Marchand, Marchand's playing at the highest level I've ever seen him play.
But he's not playing with them. So where I know
No.
He's not.
I guarantee you, to get Hull going, he will have looks with everybody. Pasternak, all of them. He's gonna get his looks.
They gotta win hockey games. Can they afford to be giving little tryouts to everybody?
Yeah. They're gonna have to, because they can't advance without him. They're gonna need him to score. It's been an issue. He's supposed to be the guy that alleviates some of that. If it means seeing some shifts with the big boys, then that's what Cassidy's going to have to do.
Do you think it works? Because I'm not sure.
I don't like his game, but I didn't like anybody's game in Buffalo. But he's not a two-goal scorer, boys. He's better than that.
But
he may never be an MVP ever again, but he's not a two-goal scorer in the National Hockey League. So he's got to find something there that can contribute. I think he's got it in him.
Listen,
we'll see.
I want to give credit to the production staff there, Tim, for finding as many angles as possible of both goals.
Two goals, yeah. That is without a doubt what I was thinking. People have been ripping Taylor Hall the entire week, and we've had the two goals on repeat over and over.
Right,
set up a few goals, too.
Hold on, boys. Still two more goals than you'll ever have, all three of you.
That is true. Listen, they're only 4 points up. They do have two games in hand. They're only 4 points up on the Rangers. It appears as though they'll get in. Even if they get in, they got the Caps in the first round. Dangle, did you like what the Caps did? Because, I mean, they're going to be a big, tough team, but they gave up a lot to get Manta.
Well, it's like, I like pizza. Hey, Steve, do you want a pizza? All right. Okay, that pizza costs $250. Okay, well, I don't like pizza that much. I like Anthony Mantha, man. Like, 6'5", I think he's got decent skill. But for crying out loud, Vrana, Panic, first and a third, was it? Or a first or a second? Whatever it was too much. I do like the Washington Capitals. They're pretty good. I think putting Mantha on a line with Tom Wilson could be pretty interesting. That seems like a very unfun time. But why move heaven and earth to get this guy? I'm not sure. I guess they'll tell us.
Well,
how much did Peter Laviolette hate Jacob Vrana that he convinces them to ship him out and pay more to get him out?
Well, then it's a perfect match, because I'd ask the same question on Yzerman on Mantha. How much did he not like Anthony Mantha? And we know, guys, as history has shown us, if you're not in Yzerman's good books, a la Vinny LeCavalier, a la Marty St. Louis, Jonathan Drouin, and now add Anthony Mantha to the list, you are out.
At least you got a first and a third.
Yeah.
There was a lack of passion or consistency in Mantha's game. At age now 26, He didn't see the value in his 5.7. I think he was ecstatic to unload that contract.
Well, you get him out and you get a return on it. That seems like Detroit did well on that one. And I think, listen, it's going to be fun to watch the Caps if they do put Wilson and Anthony Mantha on the same line and just come firing down on you. Darren, the West is really interesting. Is it the Avs and Knights in that division final barring injury? Or do we even need injuries to have that, like injuries plural, to stop that from happening?
Well, St. Louis is in that four hole now, and they're coming. They've played really good in the last week and a half, scoring a bunch of goals. Looks like they've got things straightened around. They didn't do anything at the deadline. Minnesota didn't do anything at the deadline. But they've, in my opinion, Billy Guerin disagreed with me on this, on the chirp, but I think that they've overachieved a little bit, but he wasn't going to move and mortgage the future. Vegas did a depth move with Matthias Janmark, which is going to help out their bottom six. He's a 10-goal scorer. That's 20 over a regular season. And Vegas will face a team in Colorado that shored up their goaltending. So I think that the top two best teams are Vegas with their experienced great defense and Colorado with their young dynamic defense. It would be a great seven-game series. They've sawed it off so far, and I would love to see them play in the playoffs if they can get there. But I wouldn't count out St. Louis or Minnesota from pulling off an upset. They're both big, and they're both playing pretty well this year.
Kipper, is there any way to know what the best division in hockey is?
No.
The playoffs.
I'll tell you what's going to be the best is the second round. The second round of the Stanley Cup final will be must-see TV because we're going to see the likes of Carolina and Tampa Bay or Colorado and Vegas. It's going to be two teams that could have easily ended up in a final. That's how good they were if it played out differently. But we're going to see some fantastic hockey.
All right, I want to get final fours from everybody. I want to see who you got coming out of the division. Listen, I hate doing the prediction thing because things can change, but let's see who you think is the best in the division. We'll start with Dangle. Dangle, who's your final four?
Everyone get ready to roll your eyes. The Leafs, I just have a hard time believing after watching them this year. Like, they're a different team. I think they're going to come out of Canada. I'd like to see Darren get a deep run in there, but I think Colorado comes out of there. I'm going to go with the Islanders. Oof. I think it's time we put some respect on their name, and I keep trying to make Tampa lose in my head, and I can't do it. Bless Carolina. They're a great team, but I got the Lightning there.
All right, Kipper. He's got Leafs, Avs, Islanders, and Tampa.
Yeah. Maybe the only time I'll look at Dangle and go, I agree with you. That
you
could
know
be
I'm a
it.
Genius. Come on.
I don't see much different. And we know Toronto, the cakewalk that they've had so far in this North Division, there's just nobody out there right now. Even Winnipeg now, I think they've lost 4-6 against the Leafs. So that would be one of the biggest upsets if the Leafs don't come out of the division. I like Carolina a lot. Make no mistake about it. I think they could push Tampa Bay, but I think with David Savard as a big shutdown guy, and Carolina plays heavy. They really do, as they have the last few years, and arguably one of the top coaches now in Brind'Amour. So that's going to be fantastic, but I'll take Tampa Bay. And I like Colorado over Vegas. I don't know about Carlson and Chandler Stephenson as the center ice that is going to take them to the promised land there, Darren. And maybe you have more insight than me, but is that center ice strong enough to beat Colorado?
30 seconds, Darren.
Pacioretty and Stone are better with Chandler Stephenson and the speed that he brings. I'll go my final four, Winnipeg, Vegas, Washington, and Tampa Bay. A little bit different than you guys. But Winnipeg comes out of the North.
The Islanders in those blue bloods, like they've all won cups, Caps, Penguins, Bruins. That's going to be fun to see if they can battle through all that. Listen, boys, this was fun. Never mind. Getting the Wonder Twins
it's
back
over?
Together. Yeah, we're already done. Hard out in 10 seconds. Appreciate you, boys.
Hey, what's
love
your favorite
you guys.
Hand?
Sorry?
What's your favorite hand?
Sorry? Oh, you cut out, Darren. You cut out. Flames Leafs preview still on the way. Plus, the Jays have dealt with plenty of her. It's this Zoom call. Like, I can't hear anything, dude. I'm sorry. I can't. I didn't know you. It'll be Yankees and
well
Jays
played,
later.
Tim. Well
I tried.
Played.
I tried. The laugh.
Senator O'Connor, ladies and gentlemen, your second favorite Timmy, give it up for Tim McAuliffe.
Thank you very much, Sheepdogs and Raptors PA announcer Mark Strong, back for another full hour on Sportsnet Ontario West 360 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. A half hour elsewhere ahead of the Jays and Yankees. Blue Jay Central taking over. Jeff Blair will be in studio shortly, plus Chris Cuthbert from Scotiabank Arena, ahead of the Flames and the Leafs. And speaking of, that's exactly where we begin. Should be a special night as David Riddick will start against his former team after flying with them to Toronto. Milan Lucic will also play his 1,000th career game with more. Let's check in with Sean McKenzie, who is at Scotiabank Arena. Sean, take it away.
Yeah, Tim, sports really are an amazing thing. Yesterday morning, David Riddick is a member of the Calgary Flames. He gets traded to Toronto. Conveniently enough, the Flames are flying to Toronto, so he could have flown commercial, but the Flames would never make him do that. So he hops on the charter with his old team. One more road trip with the boys. Apparently there was lots of chirping, lots of comments. He gets here to Toronto, and that was when Sheldon Keefe spoke to him and really talked to him about, do you want to play? Where's your mindset at? Just to make sure he was comfortable. And David Riddick apparently was adamant that, hey, he wanted to jump right in and play. And he comes into a time when the Leafs were red hot up until that game in Montreal last night. I got the chance to speak to Mitch Marner just a few moments ago. He said the one thing they have to fix, well, that is, of course, their first period.
People are whispering in my ear right now, Sean, that you are playing hurt. I know they had a terrible first period, and you could maybe say that the Leafs played hurt in the opening period against the Habs yesterday, fall behind 2-0. But they're whispering in my ear that Sean McKenzie is playing hurt. What the hell's going on?
Yeah, so I don't know if you can tell right here. I don't like to make it about me or throw the words courageous or brave out. You might use those words. It's up to you. That's totally your call. You probably will. But so it's a bit of a serious cut, and how I got it is not something I'm necessarily proud of. You can tell the hair's long. I was low on product. It's a glass jar of hair product, and I really had
hair
to kind of dig into the bottom to get it. Hair product.
Oh, okay.
Hair gel, wax, like a paste.
What do I know?
And so I had to get right into the bottom of it, and I dropped it a couple weeks ago. So the glass was taped back together and caught a piece of glass.
Oh.
So it was a horrific injury that I am battling through. A full broadcast to do tonight. I think I'm going to make it, I might have to go on the IR for a while.
Is that Kleenex on your finger right now? What have you got wrapped around it so that we can
see it? Are you kidding? Just because you don't use hair product doesn't mean you have to come after me and be petty about it. This is athletic tape. This is like a real tried and true physiotherapy athletic tape that the pros use.
Listen, I know you've never watched TSN in your entire life, but have you seen Craig Button, my friend's face, in the last couple days? All right, don't come to me with your index finger injury, okay?
But that's tough. But this, if you ever had like a cut right against your nail, it's horrific. Awful.
That is enough. Sean McKenzie, enjoy the game tonight. I know why. Well, only one in the North, so we had to talk to you. There is Sean McKenzie.
Bye.
Playing hurt, apparently. Got a cut in his finger from hair product. All right, let's move on. 2021 Memorial Cup has officially been canceled. In a statement, CHL President Dan McKenzie said the decision was made based on the limitations on travel, border restrictions, and quarantining requirements that would make it impossible to produce league champions. Oh, yeah, that and the OHL hasn't played yet. It's the second straight Memorial Cup to be canceled due to the pandemic, a tough break for a bunch of kids who may never get the chance. Again, the Jays are back in action tonight against the Yankees. It's on Sportsnet East Pacific and one. Hyunjin Ryu gets the start facing Jameson Taillon. Jays were shut down by the Yankees pitching last night to fall to 4-6 on the early season. Here is the lineup against Taillon tonight. Almost identical to last night's lineup with one exception. Danny Jansen will be behind the plate to catch Hyunjin Ryu. You'll notice Teoscar Hernandez missing once again. Charlie Montoyo, an update on him and other Jays injuries just a minute ago.
Hey guys, I got some updates for you guys. Teoscar Hernandez tested positive for COVID-19 today. So, of course, he's going to have to stay, because the protocol, he's going to have to stay out for at least 10 days. And that begins today. Josh Springer had BP today. He's on fungal drills. He went, but he won't be going with us on the road. He will stay behind and continue his rehab. Nate Pearson has a live BP tomorrow at the complex. It'll be one inning. Thomas Hatch had a bullpen today, 20 pitches. And Tyler Chatwood play catch today. Those are the updates.
Not exactly all the news that Jays fans wanted to hear. So Teoscar Hernandez test positive 10 days starting today. Springer not going on the road with the Jays. That's the latest. All three professional Minnesota sports teams postponed their games yesterday after Sunday's fatal shooting of Dante Wright by police during a traffic stop. The incident occurred in a Minnesota suburb of Brooklyn Center, which is about 10 miles from where the Derek Chauvin murder trial is currently taking place. Protests in Minnesota are ongoing, but the Twins, and T-Wolves return to action today. Let's get you caught up to date on the Red Sox and the Twins, both teams showing respect for the family of Dante Wright as they came onto the field to observe a moment of silence. Bottom of the first, as we got to baseball, Byron Buxton, broken bat double down the line, his 10th extra base hit in the first 10 games. That ties a franchise record and sparks a two-run inning to give the Twins a 2-0 lead. Top of the fifth, Hunter Renfro hammers one through the snow, and if you can see the ball in all that snow, you can notice it just over the outstretched arm. They'd add another in the inning to tie it at two. Top eight, man on for Bobby Dalbec. He laces one into the corner, run scores. Red Sox have won seven in a row after losing their first three of the season. 4-2 is your final there. And again, Nets and T-Wolves, both players wearing shirts in support of social justice following the death of Dante Wright. Second quarter, Blake Griffin in the actual game forces the turnover, gets it ahead to Bruce Brown for the breakaway jam. Third quarter, Kevin Durant heating up again. I don't know if Shannon Sharp is on the floor, but he's looking good. Three-point play, bucket, bruise. And right now, it is a big-time Nets lead, 123-90, a 33-point lead in the fourth quarter. As mentioned earlier, some bad news for Jamal Murray, who tore his ACL last night in the Nuggets' loss to the Warriors. He is out indefinitely with no timetable for his return. Murray was having a great season, averaging career highs in points, steals, assists, field goal percentage, and three-point percentage. His Denver Nuggets had the sixth-best record in the NBA. Not only will the injury cost him a chance at another NBA title run this year, but it means he'll miss Canada's Olympic qualification this spring, a major blow to both team and country. Losers of three of their last four games, the Raptors back in action tonight versus the Atlanta Hawks. Kyle Lowry will miss the game for rest or tanking or either or. Or just they're coming out of COVID and everyone's tired. Fred VanVleet still out with his hip injury. The Bulls keep losing. So the Raptors are only a game and a half back of the final play-in spot heading into tonight's game. Hey, UEFA Champions League quarterfinal second leg. PSG lead 3-2 on aggregate after their away win in Munich last week. 34th minute, Neymar, multiple step overs. And then he fires a shot near post, Manuel Neuer diving stop because he's pretty good and shows it again. 39th minute, PSG continue to pressure. Mbappe hits the post squares for Neymar. Another chance. He can't score. Just 1 minute later, though, here comes Bayern Munich, and they get one. Maxime Choupo-Moting buries a rebound, and it's 1-0. However, they couldn't get the second away goal. Aggregate finishes 3-3. PSG advances on away goals. They are on to the semis. It seemed like a final. That's how good the matchup was between Bayern and PSG. Here's Chelsea and Porto. Still no score. Injury time. Chelsea up 2-0.
Or they will play Real Madrid, against whom they won their first ever European trophy. That's a brilliant goal. Oh, my goodness. What a fabulous goal by Mehdi Taremi for Porto. It has come with 1 minute of added time to play. It's a sensational goal, but is it too late?
Unbelievable.
I will answer that. Yes, it was too late. It was 2-1 on aggregate, despite the lovely goal. Chelsea advances to the Champions League semifinal for the first time since 2014. Listen, more footy for you, more of the beautiful game, as a women's friendly between Canada and England taking place. Now, Canada beat Wales 3-0 on Friday, and they got off to a great start against the sixth-ranked team in the world. After a moment of silence to honor the Duke of Edinburgh, who passed away at the age of 99, the Canadians find a spot early. Evelyn Veans in for the injured Christine St. Clair. Second goal in as many games, 1-0 Canada. 29th minute, it is a England free kick. And a, just a touch from Stephanie Labbe to parry it over the bar. 83rd minute, England's Lauren Hemp knocks heads with Vanessa Gilles. And Hemp ends up with a nasty gash on her forehead, bleeding heavily. Gets taped up, ready to check back into the game. Tough as nails. But on the ensuing free kick, Canada sends it deep. And the ball gets all the way to backup keeper Karen Bardsley. And she did not get it away. Nichelle Prince off the ugly giveaway. That's a quality win for the Canadian women after beating Wales 3-0. They beat England 2-0. And listen, when I said I would get by with a little help from my friends for this show, I knew I would have to lean on experts and generalists alike. It is rare that a friend is both. But that would include my next guest. If you follow baseball in this country, you know he's at the forefront of folks you need to follow and read, and has been for years. But he also dabbles around the CFL, the NHL, even U Sports, dating back to his days at the University of Manitoba. As if that weren't enough, he also has a great deal of passion for the beautiful game. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeffrey Blair joining us here. Yay.
Gee whiz. That's very nice intro. Thank you. I'll come back tomorrow if you want.
Nice, awesome. I keep doing it if you keep coming back.
Maybe not.
That's a quality win for Canada again. I know it's a friendly, but...
Yeah, it's... Well, Bev Priestman.
I was going to say without Christine Sinclair to add on, but you could have said that and I could just shut up. But.
No, it is a great point. It's a huge win for them. England is the sixth-ranked team in the country. It's a country that spends a lot of money on its women's program. Its women's program is very high profile, and Canada has a new coach in Bev Priestman, and it's hard to argue with the impressive start.
No, and listen, I think they got one there. It's kind of gifted, but three goals without Christine Sinclair. If anyone were to talk about what you miss when you don't have Christine Sinclair, everyone would say, well, we'll worry if Canada can score.
Yeah.
And to put three up against England, or two up against England, and then three up against Wales.
The Canadian women's program, much like the Canadian men's program, has a lot more depth than it's had in a long time. Christine Sinclair, look, is still the best, arguably one of the three best Canadian athletes I've covered. She's still the best women's player in Canada, I think. But Ashley Lawrence and a few other players are kind of pushing her. And, you know, we shouldn't be surprised because, as my friend Stephen Brunt says, you know, Canada does perform well in an Olympic year. That's World Cups were not so... You got to work in that a little bit. But our women's program generally performs well during an Olympic cycle. And, yeah, that's a massive win for them. And my understanding is, you know, they were full value for 2-0.
I know you to be a fan of German soccer. Ugh. Is that it? No?
Yeah, but we don't have to talk about what happened today with PSG.
You know what? No?
No.
No, PSG.
We don't have
Bayern. What about Dortmund? You want me to bring up Dortmund? I can bring up Dortmund. They're still alive. No,
Dortmund's still alive. But it's this is not losing to PSG is this it's not good. They're a reprehensible group of people. That's really the only way to put it.
Why?
And it's nothing to do with the fact that it's French. It's got none. I'm not playing that. It's just it's.
The way they came about their success. Are you listen? I have yet to adopt a club team.
Yeah, and don't adopt PSG. Bad human beings adopt PSG as their team. It's been a tough year for them. But in most years, if you took the New York Yankees and put them in, I don't know, low A, you'd sort of have the equivalent as to the level of competition that PSG has.
You're smashing on Ligue 1. By the way, good news on Jonathan David. Today, yes. It looks like he will be back in the lineup for Lille. Speaking of Ligue 1. I don't know. I want to do it. All right, you want to talk some baseball?
Let's talk some baseball.
All right, counting down to the Yays. That's the Yankees and the Jays combined. The Jays and Yankees right here on Sportsnet East. Pacific and one. We will tee it up with Jeff Blair after the break. Plus, Leafs and Flames pregame to the pregame as well. Tim and Friends continues on Sportsnet. The Yays. Hey, how about those Yays? Welcome back to Tim and Friends, Yankees and Jays on the way. The Blue Jays Central, or just Blue Jay Central with Jamie and Joe on Sportsnet East Pacific and Sportsnet 1 at 6:30. I'm trying to do all the navigating so you know where the game is, but just push the guide thing on your converter and you can figure it out. And coming into this season, the Jays' pitching had a lot of question marks, and the bats were supposed to rake. Well, 10 games in, and as Wins and Flosses pointed out on Twitter, hasn't exactly been the case. The Jays' team ERA sits at 3.10, which is good for sixth lowest in all the major leagues. Meanwhile, the offense is struggling in terms of WRC+, which stands for Weighted Runs Created+. Jays well below average as a team at 79. That's the fifth worst mark across all the majors so far. As Jeff Blair joins me, it's kind of ass backwards, isn't it?
It's not what we expected. No. I think that's safe to say. I think getting George Springer back will answer a lot of those issues. I think once George Springer's back, you can maybe do some things with the lineup. But, you know, my concern right now is this is a team that really doesn't have much in the way of left-handed hitting, and the two left-handed hitters that does have, Rowdy Tellez and Kevin Biggio, haven't done much. And look, I've got a lot of concern about Kevin Biggio because he is essentially being pitched to and being retired the same way teams were pitching him and retiring him halfway through last year. He cannot handle pitches up. And I don't know how you, as a manager, I don't necessarily know how Charlie Montoyo manages around a lineup that has Kevin Biggio being very easy to pitch to, Rowdy Tellez not hitting anything, and you know, you're not getting anything out of Danny Jansen or Alejandro Kirk as well. Right. And then you add in that you don't have George Springer. That's a lot out of the lineup.
And if people thought, hopefully they get Springer back soon, hopefully Teoscar's back soon, we hear from Charlie Montoyo. So Teoscar has tested positive for COVID-19. He is out at least 10 days from today. And that George Springer won't make the road trip. Now, this is an interesting road trip because it goes after New York, two more with the Yankees. On Thursday, it's to Kansas City for four, then to Boston for a quick two-game set. Now, I don't know if Charlie meant this as well, but it's Tampa for three more after that.
Yeah, my initial assumption was when they're in Tampa, perhaps Springer comes over. But I know this. They don't, you know, these are two sort of soft tissue injuries. They don't want to fool around with it. I get that completely. I'll tell you, it's been such, we spent all year talking about, or all offseason talking about how concerned we were about pitching injuries because we were going to ask all these guys to add more innings on, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. You look around baseball, and man, position players are going down with a lot of soft tissue things. So I'm hoping from the Blue Jays' point of view that they're going to err on the side of caution with George Springer. It makes no sense not to at this point in time. But, wow, no George Springer, no Teoscar Hernandez in your lineup.
All right, let me stop pooping on this parade. Robbie Ray looked good last night.
Yes, he did. And I think if there's anything to take away from what we've seen so far with the Blue Jays, it's the fact that Robbie Ray, and we're talking a relatively small sample size, but in Robbie Ray, Hyunjin Ryu, and Steven Matz, you would have to say that based on what we've seen out of them so far through five starts, they're probably farther along, certainly Matz and Ray are, than a lot of us thought they'd be. And that was my biggest concern about this team going into the year. I wasn't worried about the bullpen. The Jays always figure the bullpen out. That's not going to be an issue. I think the hitting will be there. My concern was how do you get by with basically one sure thing in Hyunjin Ryu and then a bunch of question marks.
And your 2-3. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of lefties, and I think they're probably going to have to be careful with Matz. I think you're probably going to see them try to match him up a little more as they go along. But it's look, they're way ahead than where I thought they'd be right now in terms of starting pitching.
Ross Atkins told MLB Network today that Nate Pearson, pain-free, throwing at 100% intensity. Now it's just about building him back up. He came on like an absolute rocket ship last year.
Yes.
And there was this feeling this year that he could develop into either a really good two, maybe even an ace. Where are you on the Nate Pearson and expectations for this year, knowing full well that he's going to have to be stretched out and all of the things that go into this season as well as the injuries?
Yeah, I mean, I said at the start of the year that I was going to take whatever I could get from Nate Pearson as a bonus. I wasn't counting on him being the number two starter this year. The guy hasn't stayed healthy. He's 25 years old, 24 years old. He doesn't have a full minor league season under his belt. He hasn't had a regular run as a starter. I would like to see the Jays do what Texas has done, and that is piggyback, maybe put him with Anthony Kay in a situation where you say to them, okay, you two are going to pitch every fifth day. If we're facing a team that is right-handed heavy, Nate, you get the start. Anthony comes in after you. Anthony, if we're facing a team that's heavy in lefties, you start. Nate comes in after you. It's what Texas is doing with a couple of their young guys. It's kind of what the Jays did with Aaron Sanchez when they brought him in. They put out a schedule for Aaron and said, look, we can't guarantee, we're monitoring your innings, and we may have to make some decisions as it goes along, but right now you're starting here, and you're starting here, and you're starting here, and you're starting here. So adjust your schedule accordingly. Set your pre-game routine accordingly. I'd like to see them do that with Nate Pearson, but at this point in time, I'm sort of sticking with it. If Nate Pearson is capable of giving this team five innings at some point in August, I think that's going to be really successful. I'm not counting on it at this time.
Understood. So we're talking about a couple of the big-time prospects, and for a couple of years, we were waiting for Vladdy to bust out. Is this the start of him busting out?
It sure looks like it. I know my Baseball Central colleague Kevin Barker spent a lot of time talking about how different he looks, and Barker makes the point. He talks about a guy looking hitterish at the plate, and what he's saying is it's not just what you swing at, it's how you react to close pitches, it's how you take pitches. Are you in an aggressive position? Are you in a position that suggests to the pitcher, okay, I couldn't get to that pitch, but don't throw it again because the next time I will get to it. And you're seeing that from Vladdy. And the other thing, I have to tell you, if I had to give Vladdy a letter grade for his work at first base so far, I'm going B or B plus. Right. There's really been one play this year that I think you can look at Vladdy and go, yeah, a bona fide major league first baseman makes that play. But I think this is the guy we thought we were going to see all along. And it's funny, but I look around the Blue Jays infield, and I'll tell you what, I'm more concerned right now about about Bo Bichette at shortstop than I am about Vladdy at first base.
Yeah, this is going to be the running theme of the year, how they play defensively and where this young core shakes down when it matters most or when they get into contention. And listen, this is not to say that Bo Bichette is a bad player or not a great player. He might eventually become that, but learning at the big league level at shortstop is very hard. And if it continues where he struggles, you're going to see him at a different spot.
Yeah, look, I don't think you'll see it this year. There may be games where Marcus Semien plays at shortstop and Bo DHs. But let's be clear, for the past two off seasons, the Blue Jays have looked at shortstops.
Yeah.
We know that they talked about Francisco Lindor, and we know that last year they talked about Didi Gregorius as well. Now, we also know that they have kept Bo very much
in the loop.
In the loop. Yeah. Like they have told him when they were going after Marcus Semien, they told him before Marcus Semien signed that we are signing this guy as a second baseman. So they're not going to drop this on his lap. But you look ahead to this offseason, there are a lot of good shortstops available out there. And I've got to think if you're the Blue Jays and you have a shot at a guy like Trevor Story, maybe you go to Bo and say, hey, we appreciate what you've done, but dude, it's time to move to second base.
Yeah. All right, can you stick around?
I got nothing else to do, no place to go.
Might even talk some hockey. Blue Jays Central is coming up on Sportsnet East Pacific and Sportsnet One. But again, just hit the guide on your controller. It takes care of you. It's a really a magical thing.
It's the easiest thing to do.
It is the easiest thing. We'll continue on Sportsnet Ontario, West 360, and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We'll tee up the Flames and the Leafs. David Riddick facing his former team in his first game as a Leaf. Chris Cuthbert, the call, and joins us next. Tim and friends, we're back in 60. No flipping. Welcome back, kids. Flames and Leafs coming up on Sportsnet Ontario and West regionally. Hockey Central starts at 7 Eastern, 5 Mountain. So we got you covered. Just put down the remote. We are good. It'll be game number 1,000 for Milan Lucic. So a special night on tap. Also for David Riddick, who starts against his former team after flying to Toronto with the Flames after being traded. Here's Lucic on how that went.
There were definitely some fun happening there as far as pokes and jabs, and you know, obviously with the circumstances, you don't ever really experience something like that before, you know, flying with an ex-teammate or somebody on another team. But it's kind of nice. It was kind of nice and cool to have him around for a little bit there and be able to properly say goodbye. And like I said, you wish him all the best after tonight's game.
Wish him all the best, but try and get into his head. Tim and Friends continues with my friend Jeff Blair in studio. And we welcome one of the best play-by-play voices in Canadian sports, who also happens to be calling the Flames and the Leafs. You can hear him regionally in Ontario. Chris Cuthbert joins us. Thank you, sir, for taking time on a game day. We really appreciate it.
Always good to be with you, Tim. And Jeff.
Thank you.
Kind of odd to get off the plane and have a chance to drive another nail into the coffin of your former team like David Riddick's going to get here.
It's a pretty cool situation. And, probably hasn't been on the ice in a couple of days and now has to go in and make a debut with a new team but against his former team. And Sheldon Keefe, it sounded like, gave him the option of whether this would be the right time, and clearly he jumped on the opportunity, and circumstances are pretty interesting. Maybe the most famous case, by the way, I think it's been 20 years or so since this happened before, where a goaltender was traded and then ended up playing against his former team. You guys, at least Jeff, is old enough to remember Eddie Jackman being traded to Detroit, playing the Rangers at MSG and beating the New York Rangers, and all the fans at MSG were chanting Eddie, Eddie that night in salute. So at least David Riddick's playing in an empty building tonight, but he's on home ice for the Maple Leafs tonight.
Chris, I'm wondering, when I look at the Leafs, there were a lot of things going into the year that you could have told me and I would have said, okay, I'll go along with that. If you had told me that we'd be talking about the power play at this point of the year as being an issue for this team, I may not have bought into that necessarily. Is this just simply a matter of, I know some of the guys in the panel were talking about this the last game, they're just having issues with their zone entries, or is there something else at work here?
It Sheldon Keefe thinks it's 100% mental. Hard to argue with that right now. I mean, that you're right. This is the one issue. I remember when basically these guys got put together last year, and you thought if anybody can go 40% on a power play, which is probably impossible, but this group might be able to be the closest to doing that. And now all of a sudden they've fallen out of the top 10 for the first time this year, and there's really no explanation for it. They've got the hottest goal scorer in hockey out there, and the only time he hasn't been dangerous lately is on the power play.
Chris Cuthbert joining us here on Tim and Friends with Jeff Blair in studio. You had told me that the power play goes cold. This team's in first place. I would have kind of looked at you sideways, too. Has the team defense changed? Because it's been a couple of different goalies. David Rittich now gets in there. Is there a visible difference to you between the team defense the Leafs are playing, say, this year versus last year?
No, I don't think there's any question of it. And it starts with guys like Austin Matthews, who really noticeably has improved his game 200 feet. But this feels like the best defensive core they've had in quite some time. And you're right, we're still, I mean, Jack Campbell's been good, but the goaltending remains one of the question marks, if you can say that, one of the biggest areas that might still be of concern with this team, and maybe that speaks volumes of how much improved they become as a defensive team, and the penalty killing's been better of late as well. It doesn't have a great ranking yet, but of late it's been better, and it seems to have made up for the fact that they have been so poor on the power play.
Chris, understanding that we still need to see Nick Foligno go through, you know, the COVID protocols, quarantine, all those things, when the Leafs have everybody available, leaving aside Riley Nash for now, when they have everybody available, what type of an impact do you think this will have on Joe Thornton's ice time? And is there conceivably a chance that we may see less of Joe Thornton once Nick Foligno is here?
Got to see less of somebody, and that might seem like a possibility that he may get spelled in a little bit more or a little less than in the past. That is going to be one of the dilemmas for Sheldon Keefe, because he's going to have 13 or 14 forwards that he can play on any night. It's a nice problem to have, but it might be a little bit uncomfortable for a 41-year-old guy that came here to be part of the solution.
For a guy that plays the way Milan Lucic plays, which is similar to Nick Foligno, as I watch the highlights of Foligno just running over people, I'm not sure you expect the kind of love that Lucic has been getting for game number 1,000. But I think it speaks to the respect that he's earned, especially from his former teammates. Have you noticed the same thing, just how much respect around the league he has, even though he plays the way he plays?
No question. I think part of it might be that he has scored over 200 goals in the league. I went through all the 1,000 game guys thinking, man, he's probably got way more penalty minutes than anybody else that's hit 1,000. But actually, it's not the case, which might surprise you now. Now, fights might be a different story, but we all know the way he's played. It's been a hard 1,000 games, but he's earned it. An accomplished guy. He's won a Memorial Cup. He's won a Stanley Cup, over 200 goals in his career. And I think there's a general respect around the league for anybody that hits 1,000 games. That's a pretty impressive milestone.
Not only are the Flames facing their former goaltender, but they're playing without Sam Bennett for the first time in a while, at least as a member of the team. He's been a fixture there for a long time. Did any of the players speak to you, or did you hear them on Zoom speaking about not having Bennett there?
No, I think that, it almost felt like it was an inevitability that Sam might have to leave and get a fresh start somewhere else. I think when you look at it, it may have been a missed opportunity for him and the Flames together. He's the highest drafted player in the history of the Calgary Flames, which was kind of a surprise to hear that. It, for whatever reason, didn't work out in the regular season like it seemed to work in the playoffs. And it is too bad the playoffs. Sam Bennett never really showed his best during the regular season after the rookie year. I mean, he had a good promising rookie year, and after that, just wasn't the same.
Christopher, thank you very much for doing this. We appreciate it. I just like hearing the voice on the day of a game. It makes me feel like we're getting set for a little hockey. Thank you for doing this.
But always good. Final game between these two teams, which means we're getting later in the schedule.
Yeah, getting close to the playoffs. There is Chris Cuthbert.
Thanks, Chris.
At Scotiabank Arena ahead of the Leafs and the Flames. I'm just thinking about where we are with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and you and I who work in this market and have worked in this market for a long time, have watched the four straight failures. Mm-hmm. And before that, even, dare I say, a Leafs fan's understanding of what the franchise had been through and where they were. They were on their way to becoming Cubs-like or Red Sox-like, yeah, in the lovable loser and embracing and understanding that. That's changed. Like, it's gone, and the expectations are back.
Yeah, you know, look, I think this happened a couple of years ago. I used the line that I thought Leafs fans, they had the delusion beaten out of them. They really did. No, yeah. Listen, I think of all the Toronto fan bases. Boy, this is going to really make me unpopular. I think of all the Toronto fan bases, at some point, Leafs fans became the most realistic.
Yeah.
Everybody talks about, the Leafs win three in a row, they plan the parade. No, they don't. And I can tell you from doing a radio show that Leafs fans, as I said, they have a perfect read.
Oh, you think it's still there?
Team.
Yeah.
I absolutely do, because, yeah, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of faith in Kyle Dubas for start. But let's look at what this team has done this year. We said going into the year that this was all about, the Leafs are going to make the playoffs. We know that. That's a given. This is all about getting ready for the postseason, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, this team hasn't won a playoff series in some folks' lifetime. I get that. But look at what this team has done this year. Look at how it completely took Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl out of three games. Pretend that's a playoff series.
Yeah.
It took two of the best players in the league out of that game. It's been able to have success against the Winnipeg Jets, another team with elite talent. They now have Wayne Simmonds, Joe Thornton to a certain degree, but they've got Zach Hyman, Nick Foligno.
Yeah, they got some edge.
They've got some edge.
Muzzin on the back end, Bogosian on the back end.
And to me, the biggest thing is Austin Matthews has become a guy who plays in all three areas of the ice. Like, he's not Anssi Kopitar by any stretch of the imagination. But think back to how many highlights we have seen in the past month or 6 weeks of Austin Matthews doing something on defense, whether it was breaking up that play with his leg, yeah, whether it was going back into his own end, winning the puck. And yes, he did kind of cut in front of his goal, which was not probably the smartest thing in the world, but the play worked out at the end. So I think most Leafs fans are very comfortable with where this team is, and they should be. Look, they're the best team in the division, and the only way they don't win the division, I think, is if Connor Hellebuyck stands in his head. To me, he's the only guy that prevents them from winning.
It could be Carey Price in my mind, too, but that might be just me leaning on what I've seen in the past from Carey Price and not what I'm seeing in the present for Carey Price. And for those who are wondering, listen, if the vocal minority on Twitter does not represent everybody, Jeff Blair does a show in this market. He understands. So when he says that Leaf fans aren't delusional about this team, I was one of those guys that...
Well, we all poked fun at them.
Yeah.
We all did. I mean, I do a call-in show. Of course I'm going to poke fun at Leafs fans. I spent 6 years doing it.
Yeah.
But, Timmy, I eventually had to stop because, again, they are real
self-aware.
Realistic.
Yeah, it was. They became self-aware in all the losing, mm-hmm, and then with that self-awareness became a little bit of realism,
yep,
to what the situation is. And then when everyone can just say 1960-70, it's hard to fire back.
But 1967 doesn't even work that much anymore with people. It doesn't get people worked up that much.
I think that you're familiar with the term last call.
Oh, well, I mean, not for the past 14 months. I mean,
used to be. Will you stick around for our last call here?
What are you serving?
Jesse Rubinoff.
Do I get Jesse Rubinoff in the rocks?
we'll see if we can get some ice. We'll do last call. Or maybe we'll just find...
He's so cool, he doesn't need ice.
Hey, look at that. All right, we close out this edition of Tim and Friends. Jeff Blair in studio.
Where's my last call? I'm looking for him.
Well, yeah, I know. I should have got the bottle back from Sixero that I gave him for the last show.
I think he's drunk it yet. Has he drank it?
I don't know. It was a bottle of Remy. And I don't think that he, like, it's a good bottle. I'm just saying, like, I don't think he knew what the bottle was. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I tried to get him a good bottle so that it would be like a, you know, like a final goodbye.
He just looked at it and.
Oh. And smashed. The shot was like.
Somebody said cologne. Who said cologne? Yeah. That, like, was genius. Like, that was genius.
Jacar Noir. It was like, I mean, he had a lot in there. All right. Jesse Rubinoff, last call.
Jesse we'll get Rubinoff the bottle on the rocks coming up. Why don't we start last call with the Raptors, who host the Hawks.
All right.
Tonight in Tampa, Toronto currently in 11th place in the Eastern Conference, 1.5 games back of the Chicago Bulls for the final spot in the play-in tournament. And if the standings remain the same, the Raps will be drafting 8th overall. The debate is raging among Raptors fans to tank or not to tank. So, Jeff, where do you stand?
This is the easiest decision in the history of Toronto sports. It is. You're not getting anybody good in free agency this year. There's nobody around. Your core players are all signed up. They've got no reason to play hard. Kyle Lowry doesn't want to play hard. He's going as a free agent. You tank. You absolutely tank. Plus, nobody is watching your games in person because you're playing in Tampa. This shouldn't even be a topic of discussion. You tank. You lose every game from this point on.
I think with all the rest that you're seeing from Kyle Lowry, and I think that the team is the only thing that I would say to stop it is that if the team is against it, if the team wants to play in the playoffs, if the team wants to push as hard as they can, but they've gone through everything you could possibly go through this year. And if they say, I'm good with it, then I'm good with it. Because I think it's a terrible culture set to lose games on purpose. I don't think it's a good thing for any franchise.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I want the best.
You want that 6th pick instead of the 10th pick.
I really do, yeah.
I know, but I don't think it's that important. I think how you draft is more important than where you draft.
It's a lot easier if the guys aren't healthy, too. Nick Nurse saying today that Fred VanVleet doesn't really look like he's close. So
the Knicks drafted a bunch of guys really high, and they have, like, one of them left, right?
Yeah, but you look at that Raptors core right now. You can build in that core. You've got Freddie.
No, but that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. They draft well. So to me, it doesn't really matter if you draft 10th or 6th, but it might matter this year because it's a pretty deep class. Mm-hmm.
Want to move on?
Yeah, sure.
Let's do it. We just saw Hideki Matsuyama.
You can tell me that.
Win the Masters on Sunday. 35 years ago today. In 1986, Jack Nicklaus won his 18th and final major and 6th Masters, becoming the oldest golfer to ever win at Augusta at the age of 46. All records that still stand today. Tim, you're approaching your 46th birthday. Is there anything that you're worried you'll never be able to do again?
Is there anything? Well, there's one thing that I always worry about never being able to do again. But they got a pill for that, Jeff. So I've been told. But
listen, I'm 61, man.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I was playing baseball.
Right.
And my son is now easing in towards 11. So he can actually hit my pitching. So I started pitching almost for real to my son for the first time. Ooh. And I'm going to tell you right now, my entire upper body, even my off arm was sore the next day. My quads from pushing off were sore. Like, it felt very 45-ish.
You're an athlete. You got to ramp up. You got to start with a little long toss.
I know. I didn't do that. I did not do that. I just went in and started pitching like an idiot.
I'll tell you guys how old I am. I am so old that the stuff I used to do at 46 is now legal.
That's good. That's a good way to move on. The CFL Hall of Fame announced its class of 2021 earlier today, including former Alouettes and Buffalo Bills head coach Marv Levy. Levy will join Warren Moon and Bud Grant as just the third person inducted into both the CFL Hall of Fame and the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Jeff, will he be the last?
Ooh. Well, boy, I mean, are we ever going to see another CFL season? He might be. He might be.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to think off the top of my Doug Flutie. No.
I can tell you who else has been inducted into, if that helps. So okay. Will Johnson, Nick Lewis, Orlando Steinauer, Mike Walker, Don Wilson, and Doug Mitchell as a builder.
Yeah.
The only others to be.
You mean in the CFL Hall of Fame? Yeah. That's the class for the CFL Hall of Fame, the Canadian Football League Hall
of Fame. No, I don't think so. And great for Marv Levy. I did, again, I'm old. Marv 74 or whatever is, or 94, however old he is. I covered a couple of his years in the CFL, and he's just, he's such a nice person.
Yeah, and a very, such a nice and a very smart man as
very
well.
Very smart.
Like, I'm thinking like Cameron Wake. Like, it's, yeah, I don't know that we'll ever see that again, and I don't even know if we're going to see another CFL season, as you mentioned.
I think that's, I got some concerns about that. Yeah, topic for another day.
4 minutes, 15 seconds left in the clock. I don't think you and I can get through that. And we've had, you and I have had in-depth Canadian football conversations newsroom.
That was my first beat, and I covered college football, and I'm a Bison alumni. So, yeah, I'll be pissed off if the CFL has to, if things turn out the way my gut tells me they're going to turn out.
When was the last time you went to a game, though?
2 years ago. It would have been Hamilton and Edmonton.
In Hamilton, yeah. At least you live in one of those spots where they still support. It's not like if you didn't go, Hamilton would have nobody there. Well, you could go down to an Argo game down there where nobody is. Yeah. All right, let's move on to the NFL.
Speaking of the Hall of Fame, Julian Edelman announced his retirement for the NFL yesterday. Might have just given away the question. But after 11 seasons with the Patriots, he's done. Last night, cameras caught up with Edelman's former teammate Rob Gronkowski in L.A., and Gronk was asked if Edelman could join him and Tom Brady on the Buccaneers.
Is there any chance that he ends up in Tampa Bay with you guys next year?
Has there a 69% chance?
Nice. Nice. Tim, the question is Julian Edelman?
Am I the only one that got the joke?
That's the question. No, I'm just scared of what the question is going to be after Gronk says 69% chance.
Okay, I just wanted to make
What's the question?
Is Julian Edelman a Hall of Famer?
Hall of Famer?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't. I saw a stat earlier today that he's never even led white guys in receiving.
On the Patriots?
In any single year, he's never been the leading white receiver in the National Football League. I think the number is, and I quickly Googled it before the show, receivers don't get in all that easily. And if you look, like, 36 receiving touchdowns. He had a couple of great years. That's not a Hall of Famer.
No, was it? It's a night. Speaking of the
winning, winning is key. But,
big moments that help build his profile.
Speaking of the 67 Leafs, we were talking about that earlier. Didn't they have like everybody in that team go into the Hockey Hall of Fame? That's the only way Julian Edelman gets in is if everybody decides that anybody who's ever played for the Patriots gets in. It's not a Hall of Fame.
He's not even
in the NFL Hall of Fame.
He had a couple great years. Don't take that away from him. He's a really good receiver, but he's not a Hall of Famer.
Who knows? A couple of reunion games in the NHL tonight, just one day after they were traded. David Riddick and Taylor Hall will face their former teams as the Flames visit the Leafs and the Bruins host the Sabres. Jeff, when was the last time you attended a reunion?
A reunion that I was invited to, or one that I crashed.
Either way,
I like the crash story.
No, we don't. We would definitely. That was back when I was 46. The last reunion I went to would have been a family reunion in Vancouver. That would have to be like 86, 87. Lots of people in the family.
86, 87.
I'm old. I told you.
No, but that's the last reunion that you've been.
My high school, university. My high school, there was like 38 kids in the graduating class. It was a small town in Manitoba. Better chance of getting everybody together for a funeral than a high school reunion with 38 kids. That's the only reunion. I'm trying to think. Maybe there was. Nah, that's it.
I did a high school reunion like 10 years ago. There was just a reunion for the schools, like the school's 50th anniversary. So people ended up going there. That's the last time I've been around.
Yeah.
But I got a lot of love for my high school, and I still live around the corner from my high school.
There you go.
The reunions will start popping up once the lockdowns are over.
Oh, there are going to be the greatest thing will be weddings and parties moving forward. Yeah. Like, you're never going to turn down another wedding invitation after all this. Eh?
Never.
Before it was I'm not going to that wedding. Now it's like,
bring on the weddings. Anything.
I'll take anything right now. Listen, thank you for popping by.
That was fun.
This.
Thank you.
It's always fun. Jesse, as always, thank you. Thank everyone else for dropping by. Chris Cuthbert, the round table that was assembled. We appreciate you. Listen, Hockey Central pregame for the Flames and Leafs is up next on Sportsnet Ontario and West. Yankees and Jays about to get underway on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Have a great night, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.